ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Jack McLennan was 27, fit and visibly strong.
He was trained well. He knew how to hit, and I was gobsmacked.
He seemed ready for anything, but then he suddenly vanished.
I was just talking to him last night. Like, how the hell does that happen?
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
There has to be something more nefarious going on.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Peter Garrett's been burning the midnight oil on Australia's AUKUS deal and has some thoughts. The musician and former Labor Environment Minister has flagged he'll be leading an independent inquiry into the AUKUS deal following that news that Australia will receive three second-hand Virginia-class submarines under the AUKUS agreement, rather than the original one new and two second-hand vessel arrangement. He's not the only one increasing the heat on the government about the change, with opposition voices also taking a public swing today. And a big moment for One Nation and a fresh face incoming into the House of Representatives, with David Farley swearing in as the member for the New South Wales seat of Farrer on the agenda today. Are we seeing early signs he might put down the culture war weapon his party leader has been pushing for so long? Welcome to Politics Now. I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein from The Morning Show on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Raf, if you simply utter the word AUKUS on the radio, what happens?
It goes off like a frog in a sock, PK.
Oh, I love frogs in socks.
Pick your midnight oil lyric, by the way. US forces give the nod. It's a setback for your country. My personal favourite, though, the Hercules track, which you may be less familiar with. Here come the submarines sinking South Pacific dreams. So first thing to say, of course, Peter Garrett has real resonance across the country for lots of different reasons. But it's the cost of the submarines. You know, you're talking north of $360 billion. Mm. Yes, that's spread over a number of decades. But actually, it's interesting what you said in your intro there about the opposition taking a swing. It's the agreement between the Liberal Party and the Labor Party about AUKUS. I actually think that fuels the explosive response on talkback, online, go on the socials. That's part of the reason for it. I mean, we can go to some of the detail.
Well, let's go on that, because yesterday we mentioned that this was happening. Just to explain it, the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, flagged on the weekend the US, UK and Australia will be streamlining the purchase of new submarines as part of the deal. Australia will now be receiving three second-hand Virginia-class submarines from the United States. And Richard Marles says this comes with significant savings for Australia. Now, this is a party that's gone on about one of the reasons they supported AUKUS is that it will build our sovereign capability. I hear the word sovereign, and I think these second-hand subs are not really within the sovereign vibe. Also, there are job implications. My word on the street is the unions are getting a little bit cranky about this not being quite what we signed up to. And when we mention the opposition opposing it, they're not opposed to AUKUS. They're opposed to the government not standing up and sort of saying, hey, that's not the deal we made. It looks to many people like Richard Marles has maybe rolled over. Like, what's happened here?
Well, we don't have any power, do we? I want to know if you think...
Well, why are we spending all the money if we've got no power?
Well, look, let's put it into a bit of context. Right? The numbers are really important. The numbers tell you everything. I want to know if this is an admission of failure by the Australian government. There's only 26 things. There's only 26 submarines right now, right? There's only 26 Virginias. We want three of them, right? It's a lot. And if you look at how many they're actually building and how slowly they're building, I think that's why we got this announcement. 20 years ago, it took them 5 or 6 years to build a submarine. Now it takes 9 or 10 years. Like, it's getting slower each year. And this isn't people like Richard Marles or Joe Courtney, who I think both you and I have interviewed, the Democrat congressman from the States. It's his constituency that has one of the biggest shipyards. They say it'll all be fine. Both the Congressional Research Service and the Congress Budget Office, the people who you can sort of trust to be straight shooters, they're getting slower at building these things. Slower, not faster. And they're building bigger ones. Right after the Virginias come these Columbia ones that have the missiles you can fling across continents, not just across battlefields. But that's all really important context. If we want three of these either a new one or a secondhand one, if they are building them more slowly than they used to, not more quickly, but more slowly, and we expect them to build them at double the rate, I think that fuels a lot of scepticism. I don't think most Australians are across that detail. But to return to it, right, the opposition are criticising them. The opposition implemented this in secrecy. Anthony Albanese had a few hours in opposition to say yes. That's been about it. And, you know, that is it. In terms of the parliament actually scrutinising whether or not this is a good decision, Peter Garrett's body is a – you can criticise him and sort of say, oh, maybe he's backstabbing the Labor Party that elevated him, or maybe he's even returning to his roots. You know, this was a big theme for Midnight Oil. But they're allowing an outlet for people to talk about something. And I think a lot of our politics and a lot of your podcast is about – all the things that we're not allowed to talk about, all the things that can't be said, that don't get an airing, this is another one of those little pressure points being released. Don't you think that's a big part of it, PK? But I want to know from you, is it an admission of failure if we're only getting second-class ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's an admission of failure. And it's a very obvious sign that the point you made about us having no power is, I think, at the centre of this. We've signed up to something where we actually have very little muscle to flex, and our lack of muscle flexing and the spin, can I say, the spin that the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, gave us about, you know, this is a better deal for us. Did you know that, Raph? This is better.
The old Corolla's better than the new Corolla, Patricia. Let me tell you why. I want you to drive a 10-year-old one. Yeah, well, you mentioned it. Your old Corolla, here I'm going to tell you why your 10-year-old Corolla is better than a brand new one. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, it's funny because I used to argue that to my partner. So, like, maybe Richard Marles and I are more similar than I thought, because I used to say it's more reliable, which is, I suppose, one argument.
Look, it's not true.
No, look, that's why it's gone now. Look, the Shadow Defence Minister, James Patterson, says he's concerned the used submarines will have a shorter lifespan. Okay, I think he's right to raise that.
Yep.
And will need to be replaced sooner. Again, right to raise that. He says it risks opening up a capability gap should our plan to build our own nuclear-powered submarines be delayed for any reason. And can I say, I don't like to sort of go out on a limb, but I'm going to predict with so much certainty that it will be delayed. I can't see. It's like predicting that day follows night, what I've just done, because that's the way things work in defence. Truly, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Also, the opposition is getting some hits in the government, I think, on some of this. Andrew Hastie was an afternoon briefing yesterday, and he was less than impressed. He, I think, has got the better lines, I've got to say, out of everyone. You know, he was just like, has the Prime Minister read the out of the deal? Like, why are we getting a bad deal? It's a good point to make, I think. You and I just conceded, well, I certainly made the argument too, that we don't have much muscle, but that does... we need to have a reckoning about that lack of muscle, and if we're okay with just not having any kind of ability to apparently influence anything and pay lots of money for that, right?
We don't have the ability to influence anything, and I think it does go to, sure, and you're right, Andrew Hastie's got the better lines, and I think I'm quite proud of myself for saying once on Insiders, Andrew Hastie's the next Liberal Prime Minister if they ever have another one, because I think all his colleagues agree with you that he's got better lines than the current leader, Angus Taylor.
Yeah, but they don't agree that he should be their leader. But anyway,
no, they
that's
don't.
Another topic.
But they do think he's a better fighter.
Yep.
But I think it goes to precisely what your podcast has been talking about for some time. The two parties, when they disagree, the media covers the disagreement. If they don't disagree, in the mainstream media don't cover the disagreement. And there's something fundamental. When Paul Keating said, this is about losing our sovereignty when this deal was first announced, that was treated as a marginal proposition. It now is becoming a more and more central proposition. There's something fundamentally flawed in the way we in the media cover the major parties, because we don't spend enough time talking about the things that make a difference to people's real lives or the things that they are concerned about. We are a bit too interested in the two-horse race. And I think the lack of our ability to talk about the fact... like, what would James Patterson and Andrew Hastie do differently, right? Like, are you really telling me? So Peter Dutton's plan at the last election was to fly to Washington and sort of wait outside the White House for a meeting? I mean, the reality of where this deal puts us hasn't received enough of an airing in the places I traditionally turn to for my news. I think it speaks to some of those those bigger problems.
I think that's right. Raph, it's not just the opposition. We mentioned Peter Garrett, of course. He was a Labor minister once, but yeah, you talked about returning to your roots. He's now going to head this independent inquiry into AUKUS because he's such a high-profile rock star. Literally, I'm not even kind of just giving him a compliment.
Still a rock star, by the way. Coming to the Queenscliff Music Festival in November. I don't know how he's going to fit in the inquiry.
Well, yeah, hopefully his bed won't be burning. Can I say, I'm such a dag, can I say I want to provide some critique before throwing to you. We know what he thinks, independent inquiry. Inquiry, my, come on. What's inquiring about? He has a view. They have a view. They have a conclusion. It's a public airing of grievance, as far as I can see, about AUKUS. That's fine. They're entitled to do that in a democracy. But let's not pretend this is some independent inquiry. Is there any chance that we'll find that AUKUS is good for the country? I don't think so.
No, there's no chance of that. You're right. In fact, I asked him this morning when he was on my show, would he be speaking to people who are in favour of the deal? And he said yes. I think the best quote from him a few years ago about AUKUS is simply that he thinks the deal stinks. So that sums up his view. And I don't think he's changing his mind about that. He's saying he's having the conversation and he wants to crowdfund it because the parliament hasn't provided the platform for that. Actually, one of the things I asked him, because he was saying this is a legitimate thing to do. He was sort of responding to your critique, I guess, saying, sure, I've made up my mind, but I think it's a conversation and argument worth airing. So the counter that I put to him was, well, hang on, I get texts and calls every day from people who are opposed to the level of migration in this country. So let's say, I don't know, someone from One Nation or someone adjacent to One Nation, like Advance, decided they were going to hold a public inquiry, crowdfunded, into the issue of migration in Australia. Our parliamentary committees aren't doing it. So I don't want to repeat myself, but we're going back to whatever we've got and whatever you're doing. You're right, it doesn't have the legitimacy of a parliamentary committee. It doesn't have the open-mindedness and I guess what I also call the important accountability of a parliamentary inquiry. But I'm sure your inbox is full of what my inbox is full of. People don't agree with the idea and the major parties don't have a major difference on this. And that's how we end up with the poll that you talked about with Jacob yesterday, with One Nation 1, Labor 2 and the Coalition 3, right? Like it's, they're all symptoms of the same problem.
Yeah, but having said that, if we're going to segue then, let's do that, talking about One Nation, and they have a new MP that's being sworn in today, so it's worth talking about.
Indeed.
They are hardly, you know, if people sort of read between the lines, you won't find that One Nation is standing up to the Trump administration on our defence needs. You will not find that. So you can smash the two major parties on something like AUKUS all you want, but you won't find some amazing alternative, autonomous, sovereign, non-reliance on the US plan from those guys.
And well, no one cheered on Trump more than Pauline Hanson
exactly,
in Australian
and
politics.
That's very important to mention. But let's go to this news, One Nation. Their polling obviously has been incredible, beating the major parties for the first time. That was discussed yesterday by Jacob and I, and many of you were listening to it, so I'm glad to hear that. But something that's happening today, David Farley will today be sworn in as the member for the New South Wales seat of Farrer. Of course, you know the history, that's Susan Lee's old seat. He basically smashed his competition and One Nation is now in the parliament in their own right, not the way Barnaby Joyce is, which is a defection, not in their own right. But yeah, he's One Nation too. So two MPs in the lower house. And he's been talking about some differences, which I've found really interesting. I've written about, I've talked about anywhere. I can get a microphone in front of me, which is pretty regularly. And come on, I've got to take the piss of myself. There's a lot of microphones. One Nation, not all on the same page when it comes to some of these culture issues. Fascinating, don't you think?
I do think it's really interesting, and I really noticed when you mentioned it on Insiders, there's the South Australian bloke who's, you know, he does not appear to fit the One Nation mould. David Farrer doesn't. David
the
Farrer,
South
by the way.
South Australian bloke, just to be clear, who spoke in his One Nation MP, elected into the South Australian Parliament, says in his maiden speech, I'm in love with a man who's a Muslim. One Nation MP. Please continue.
It goes to what the right is made up of. I think you see parallels overseas. The Tories in Britain are regularly accused on the left of being racist. They've got a far more diverse cabinet. How many of their cabinet are either born in Africa or who have parents who were born in Africa? I mean, there is something fascinating about the rise of the populist right, and we can put one nation there. They don't need to conform to an old-fashioned sort of white Australia mould. In fact, I have regularly South Asian callers who I've quizzed them in the past. They're often Hindu and big supporters of the government in India. They are big One Nation supporters. So I think it's really worth grappling with and understanding how significant the forces are that support One Nation. One really big caveat to that, the idea that One Nation is not in some way racist or prejudiced in their policies, I would really question that. The number of people who have called my show, they talk about being replaced by Indians. That is great replacement theory, far right stuff. I had a caller last week saying we should check the licenses of Muslims more than other Australians. I had a woman this week saying she doesn't want Asians and Muslims to swamp our culture. Pauline Hanson was asked on Monday by my colleague in Brisbane, Steve Austin, if she stood by saying that Australia was in danger of being swamped by Asians, which she said 30 years ago when she first got into Parliament. So there is an ugly, prejudiced tinge to One Nation's appeal. I actually think that's an objective statement, because if you talk to One Nation voters and One Nation politicians off the record, they use phrases like swamped and having special rules for Muslims. And Pauline Hanson wanted to have a royal commission into Muslims. But it isn't only that. And it isn't always the case that it's a whole lot of white people hating on a whole lot of other people that aren't white. And David Farley's a great example of that. Like, he's for the flags, standing in front of the Torres Strait Islander, the Aboriginal flag and the Australian flag. Tony Abbott isn't.
Yeah.
So, these populist waves and what they're made up of and who is in them aren't as simple as a lot of us like to think.
And that's why, going back to Farley, he's really interesting. And watch that space. He's reflecting his own view. Like, this is a guy who joined the Labor Party. I mean, I'm not surprised, actually, he has this view about the flags, because if you've even dabbled in some of the other political parties he's dabbled in, he's obviously he's not a young guy either. He's got a worldview that's developed, and clearly he doesn't feel troubled by the Aboriginal flag and not afraid to say it. He's won his seat. You know, he ran a strong campaign himself. And so I think it's what we're seeing. Why did he even want to run for One Nation when he was a member of the Labor Party? The people we're seeing come are now more diverse in thought, are more diverse in who they are, because they are motivated by not just one singular thing, I don't know, Aboriginal affairs and being annoyed about a flag. They are motivated by more things, and it means that the party is actually connecting with a wider range of issues too as a result. And that's why I think it's seeing some of its success. The other thing that I think is really interesting is that Pauline Hanson, while still sticking to her core beliefs, which is, you know, the one flag and various other sort of race culture issues, hasn't denounced these new MPs.
No.
And I think that's a sign of her maturing as well, right? Like, she's not going to get into fisticuffs with everyone, it seems to me, and let her party implode, which has been past form. She wants to keep it together.
So let me ask you about that. Yeah. And I'm happy to mention, look, they don't back a minimum wage. Pauline Hanson wants to give more money to gas companies so that they can explore for gas. They're some of the richest companies in the world.
And the minimum wage matters, because today the minimum wage decision has come out, and that's another thing for us to just at least mention, because it's a big deal and the government will be banging on about it today, because they put in a submission, which the coalition didn't used to do, calling for, and you know, basically that the minimum wage keeps up with inflation, and it's going up by 4.75%. That's actually, it falls short of the 5% and 6% wage increase supported by the unions, but it is a really significant increase, and that's something the government's backed. Back to your point, One Nation didn't, did they?
One Nation didn't back it. I think also for the first time. Like, think about this, because I think this is also absent from the debate around the budget. People aren't eating in this country, right? There are people who go for days without eating. they're either not buying the food because they can't afford it, or they're giving that food to their kids because they don't want to eat it. It's gone over 50 grand for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what salary you're on, some minimum wage workers are still not on $50,000 a year. Pauline Hanson didn't back it, and I think there's been way too much talk about One Nation in the polls and not enough about their policy. But can I double back to One Nation? Because I just want an observation from you, if I can ask you this. Mm. Pauline Hanson's being very generous to the people who are winning power, winning seats. Is it going to be different? Because 98 is the classic example, right? The Queensland Parliament, I think they won 10 seats. By the time of the next election in Queensland, there's no one left still in the party. Can you tell? Because I have these conversations with One Nation people in Victoria mainly, only one of whom is in office. They seem much better than other parties at accommodating difference. Is it going to be different this time? Like, do Barnaby Joyce and Pauline Hanson work really well together? Does Farley, does anyone else who gets in the Parliament, does that work well because that party's learnt its lessons or not?
I'm not certain they've learnt deeply the lessons, but I can tell you one thing. There is nothing like the sweet prize of winning lots of seats and being on the ascendancy, and perhaps that's keeping things in check. Now, in the past, there's been other moments of ascendancy, but not like this one, baby. This one is something else. It is genuinely unprecedented to beat the governing Labor Party in a poll and to beat your right-wing opposition, the Coalition, in many polls now, and then in a real poll on the ground in Farrah. This is real. It's happening. And I don't think she wants to stuff it up. So I think she's been disciplined. Now, whether she can keep being disciplined, whether Barnaby Joyce and Pauline Hanson can keep their relationship on the road, on the, you know, tracks, not sure. There's high chance that they can't, I think. However, I think they're motivated by the sweet victory that might come their way if they do. And that is a very big leveler. That is this sort of way of keeping a sense of discipline. So I wouldn't be surprised if they manage it, actually, because I think they, I don't know, I just think success breeds success, doesn't it? Like, they're confidence players, like so many people, actually. It's a sort of basic psychology for so many of us. If you're doing well, you want to keep doing well, and imploding and denouncing David Farley is probably not the best way to go about it, which is kind of what she's done. Who knows what she's done privately? You know, maybe Yarns will emerge and said, mate, what are you doing? What's the Aboriginal flag about? This is One Nation. Who knows? I don't know. But publicly, she's supported his right to do it in his electorate.
And you're right. Politics is a momentum game. I would just make one final observation about that minimum wage stuff. The government hasn't been great. Federal government has not been great at saying something like, we're punishing the way we workers when we tax them. We're not punishing investors when we tax them. They don't seem to be able to find the right language. The minimum wage might be a way that they can begin to do that, because I don't think they've got the cleanest, simplest lines to sell a significant tax change. And the other thing to mention about that, and the same battleground, and Pauline Hanson's One Nation not backing a minimum wage rise, speaking to you from Victoria and speaking to you as a Victorian, the state election in Victoria in November is going to be the first significant test for One Nation. They are pushing the Liberal Party in Victoria into third place. There are some people who think it's going to be a Labor versus One Nation fight in Victoria. I haven't made up my mind what it's going to be. But it'll only work for Labor if they can weaponise the wage stuff, people who aren't eating, most people who earn tax and don't invest in houses, most people who earn a salary and don't invest in shares. That's the territory they need to work harder on. And I'm not sure that Victorian Labor is able to do that, if I can end on that parochial note.
I like a parochial note. Why not? And that is the next real election we're going to be having. So it's a good parochial note, because we're talking a lot about tests and moments and, you know, and that's, yeah, the real time next experiment for the One Nation rise, I suspect.
And experiment for our politics, right? Like, if Labor's thing is most small businesses aren't affected by this, most young people aren't affected by this, most of them will be better off with these tax changes, because it's easier to say those words than to explain how a capital gains tax regime chops and changes over three different phases of Australian financial history. Like, they've got to be able to make an argument. It's a test for the parties who we've had in power since Federation, And if they can't prosecute those arguments, the future's a very big place, Patricia. The future's a very big place.
The future is enormous. That's it for Politics Now today. Raph, always good to have a debate with you.
Always a pleasure, PK.
I'm in the Parliament today, actually looking up at the TV, and Sally McManus is standing up talking about the wages. And there are what look like a gazillion workers behind her. Watch that space. I reckon the union movement, my final observation, is going to get very active in trying to dismantle the credentials of One Nation. My private mail is they're not too impressed about the government's ability so far, so they're going to muscle up a little bit. Let's see how they go with that, because they think that One Nation will be disastrous for workers, perhaps even they think worse than even the coalition, you know, and that's been their traditional rival politically. So watch that space. Tomorrow, the formidable David Spears will join me to unpack another sitting day of Parliament and everything that surrounds it. We're going to do a question time edition this week too. The party room at abc.net.au is where you send your questions. Fran and I will answer them. See you, Raph.
See you later.